Welcome back. Now, I'm delighted to be joined by Mark Lowcock, the former head of essentially the UN's humanitarian operations. Can I just ask you sort of straightforwardly, we've had all this back and forth about, you know, pauses versus ceasefires. What is the difference? And are politicians right to be concentrating on the pause?
The ceasefire thing is a red herring.
Right.
Until both sides want to scale back the hostilities, the question for the aid agencies is, can they persuade those involved in the hostilities to allow an aid operation to run? And when people talk about pauses and corridors, that's what they're talking about. Now, the best...
Give us an example. So you know, obviously, the territory, you know the ground. What, ideally, would you like to see happen?
So when I was responsible for what was the world's biggest humanitarian relief operation during the war in Yemen, when the Saudi-led coalition were carpet bombing the country, what we did was we told the coalition every day all of the hundreds of convoys and trucks and clinics and so on we were operating. And we sat down in a room with them and we said, this is what we're going to do. And the deal was they had to make sure that they didn't interfere with or bomb the operation. And so what needs to happen is, in this case, has to be the Israeli authorities need to sit down in a room with the aid agencies and have that discussion. So one day there'll be a convoy down this road, the next day it'll be a clinic in that village, right, and it will be a continuous process and it has to run all the time. You know,
So the UN wouldn't need to talk to Hamas for this?
The threat actually doesn't come from Hamas. Let me just make a point, Robert, about the importance of this. In its first 75 years, the UN lost an average of two aid workers killed a year. Mm. In the last 3.5 weeks, it's lost 60 people.
Cranky.
There is a huge danger to the aid operation.
Yeah.
And safe arrangements need to be put in place to save those more than 2 million people who are running out of food and clean water and life's other essentials.
Mm. Now, we've had the Prime Minister say, you know, UK's giving more aid, 20 million quid. Give us the context for that. Is that a significant amount of money?
I'm afraid all these announcements so far ooze tokenism.
Right.
What is going to be needed is an operation that's going to last at least a year just in the life-saving phase.
Yeah.
It's the cost.
Do you have a sense of the cost?
The cost will run into more than $1 billion. In the first 6 months, my guess is the UN shortly will come out with a plan costing many hundreds of millions. It's more than 2 million people. It's an expensive operation because every truck going across first gets inspected in Israel, then has to go round to the Egyptian border. The trucks get unloaded, they get reloaded onto Palestinian trucks. An expensive operation which needs a lot of people. And it will cost a lot of money. And if the world is smart, they will pony up now so the UN can plan for the whole of that next year. Otherwise, we face the risk that we see in too many of these crises, that the loss of life through starvation and disease and all those things is bigger than the loss of life arising from the guns and bombs and bullets.
Obviously, the work of the UN in this operational humanitarian sense is incredibly important, and it still seems to be a pretty effective organisation in that sense. But it is also supposed to be the honest broker. In a bipolar world, and that's the world we are in now, divisions between China and America in particular very wide, Russia also, obviously, absolutely on the other side these days. Can the UN fulfil its traditional function of attempting to bring calm to crises of these sorts?
You know, when I was working at the UN, the joke we made about ourselves was that we had no power and no money. All we had was a voice. So we could remind people what obligations they'd signed up to and encourage them to comply with them.
Is the voice as important as it was?
I think when tensions are high, the voice is more important than ever. We got used to a period between the late 90s and about 5-10 years ago of relative calm. But the first 40 years of the UN's life, in fact, was much tenser. Everyone remembers Khrushchev banging his shoe on the table of the Security Council. So when you have disagreement, the thing you need is a forum for people to meet and discuss and find things they can agree on.
So it's as relevant as ever, in your view.
When people complain about the UN, what they're really doing is complaining about the behaviour of the big powers in the UN.
Yeah.
There needs to be a forum, and yes, if we didn't have it, we'd have to invent it.
Yeah. Now, I want to look closer to home. You ran DFID, the Department for International Development, for many years. It was absorbed into the Foreign Office. Has it been, what's your sense of how, has it been damaged by that, in your view?
I think it's been very damaging in lots of ways. You know, if you look what other countries do, the Americans, the Japanese, the French, the Germans, they all have a separate institution for their diplomacy compared to their development effort. Mm. And the reason for that is that the skills, the expertise, the processes are just different. You're doing different things. And so the destruction of expertise, which has happened since the abolition of DFID, has been very damaging. It's made the country a bit of a laughingstock. We no longer have the influence and reputation that we used to have, and that is a pity.
And I think it's not clear to me, have Labour made a cast-iron commitment to reconstitute DFID as a separate department?
Well, Keir Starmer said last summer that that was what he planned to do. I think the question is, how do you build something which can fulfil the functions that DFID used to fulfil, but in a joined-up way across government, and is built for the modern period. And so a separate department, but properly joined together with the diplomatic capability in a way that wasn't always true in the past. That is what I think is the best model for the future. And what is sort of implied in what they've said so far, but we'll have to see.